Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, May 4th, 2011, I should confess we're stretching this a little bit because the event that we're talking about actually happened on May 2nd, 2011, but we do want to discuss this. It is the killing of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden by U.S. special forces during an early morning raid at a compound outside Abbottabad, Pakistan. The raid involved about 25 Navy SEALs, took about 40 minutes. Four men and one woman were killed along with bin Laden, whose body was removed, identified, and then buried at sea the next day. Hours after the raid, people will likely remember this, at about 11:30 p.m. Eastern Time, President Obama addressed the nation and announced that the September 11th mastermind had been killed. There are tons of interesting details in here and a ton of mythology around this moment, and it taps into this larger story about Navy SEALs and the war on terror, and that's a lot of what we're going to focus on today because of our special guest, who I will introduce in a second, right after I introduce our usual crew, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter-Jackson of Wellesley. Hello.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
And that special guest is none other than Dan Taberski. You may know him as the podcast host of Missing Richard Simmons and Running from the Cops. And there is this new series called The Line, which is about Navy SEAL Eddie Gallagher, who was accused of war crimes, but in a larger sense is about the culture of Navy SEALs, the role of Navy SEALs in the forever wars. So, Dan, we're very excited to have you on. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, man. Happy to be here.
And this is where I confess that I was the editor on this series with Dan. So Dan and I have been working along with the rest of the amazing people on the team for the last
year. Don't confess. Okay. Say it loud, say it proud.
Fair enough. Yes, I'm very proud to be the editor on this new series along with an amazing team. So, yeah. We're going to build to these larger questions, which are a lot of the things that the series gets into of the SEALs and the forever wars and so forth. But let's talk about the raid itself, the speech, so forth. It's full of all these interesting details. Dan, when you think about the kind of like moments from that raid and moments from that night, what are some of the things that come to mind?
The weirdest thing that comes to mind is that the like literally one of the first people to tweet it out was Dwayne The Rock Johnson, which is super strange, like before anybody.
Yeah.
And which is sort of incredible. And the belief, it's still not clear how that happened, but apparently the guess is that he actually does know Navy SEALs, like because of all the sort of training he does for his movies. There's a reason he looks like that. And I think he probably has some Navy SEALs to thank for it. But I do remember that. And I remember the shock of it. That you'd think that they had finally got something. It had been 10 years. I guess you kind of think there's going to be a lead up to it, but it just kind of pops out at you. And it feels, I remember how unusual the feeling was because it's a weird thing to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people were celebrating hard.
Yeah.
Like they had, live shots from college campuses and from Times Square. And people were jumping up and down like it was Mardi Gras. And that was a weird feeling.
I totally agree with that. That outside of the White House, because the news had leaked right before Barack Obama came out to make the announcement, there were crowds of people chanting USA, USA.
Yeah.
And it felt weird. I mean, it was this big moment. Osama bin Laden had been the boogeyman for the United States for the better part of a decade, and there was an outburst of joy and celebration and vengeance and all of those emotions all tied together.
I'm glad to know though that I wasn't the only one that felt uncomfortable. Like, this is not a sporting event, and yet so much of about that moment and the optics of it just felt very uncomfortable. Because also, so many people had died, had lost their lives, and there wasn't a clear sense of like how to make sense of that whole moment, and how to give it sort of the gravity that it deserved.
Yeah. There's also the idea that if it had happened the day after 9/11, I think that feeling would have been less complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that 10 years had passed, including how we had completely fucked up the wars afterwards, and there was no longer this sense of like pure victimization, true or not, it was more like victimization that really turned into a quagmire and huge global mistakes. And so it is a strange thing to celebrate. I also remember how weird it was that there was no images. There was just no nothing. Mm-hmm. I guess I had never gamed out in my head how that would play out. But they had made the conscious decision to not release any images of the body. They brought him to an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Arabian Sea and dumped him off the back. Yeah. And that was incredibly unceremonious and interesting choice that I think left a lot of people sort of like, what do we do now?
So that caused a controversy on its own because, you know, I think the Obama administration argued that, A, no pictures were released because they didn't want to create propaganda, but also that burying him within 24 hours was in tradition with Islamic law. And so there was even like pushback of like, why are you being quote unquote respectful to this enemy of this? You know, that it was no surprise, very fraught. I also remember that night I actually was working at WMIC. I when I heard what it was, I hopped on my bicycle and actually went across the Brooklyn Bridge and went down to the World Trade Center. I was like, I think people are going to be here. And then all of a sudden there were huge crowds and it was this weird, weird mix of, I think people were giving themselves permission to feel like fired up actually because the past 10 years had been so complicated. And this was like the first thing that felt like maybe there is some like clarity, like we should be happy that this person is dead. Like this is a little bit of like a clearer line there, given all the complexity of the previous 10 years. But yes, it was a very weird mix. Couple other tidbits from that night we should throw out there and then we'll get to the bigger stuff. But the tweeting, actually, there's another Twitter. There's always a Twitter angle. But actually the first person to may, in addition to Dwayne The Rock Johnson, the first person who may have like, there was a reporter who was living outside of Abbottabad who kind of ended up live tweeting this thing because he was like, it's 3 a.m. and like there's helicopters everywhere. Something's going on. Like, this is very strange. Wow. And then he's like, it's this series of 10 tweets where he's just like, you know, tweeting in the way that I would tweet if, you know, there was a power outage in my neighborhood or whatever. Wow. And then they realized, oh, man, he live tweeted this this raid. What else? This was the night of the White House Correspondents' Dinner? Mm-hmm.
It was. This was all going on in the background. And they actually had to change some of the jokes in the speech that Obama was giving. And he had to change them because only a very, very small group of people actually knew. And so there was an Osama bin Laden joke in there that he ends up taking out. And we should mention, like, one of the helicopters crashed on the way to the raid. Yeah. I mean, I think that that's important because, you know, there was an attempt back in the 1970s to save the hostages that were being held in Iran, and a helicopter crash scuttled the entire thing. And that had been something that had been a point during the debates about whether or not they should go in after Osama bin Laden was, what if this goes wrong like it did in 1979? And they went for it anyway. They still had the helicopter crash, and yet they were able to finish their mission and get out.
Well, actually, what happened after that 1979, that was called Operation Eagle Claw, and what actually happened is that led to a big reorganization of special operations in this country. So that created SOCOM, and that created JSOC, which is a Joint Special Operations Command. So all the SEALs are in SOCOM, SEAL teams 1 through 10, but SEAL team 6 is like hyper elite, and they're in JSOC for only those super SWAT team type, like nobody else can do it but them. And it was Red Squadron from SEAL team 6 that did the raid.
I was going to offer something up, but it feels superficial to say that also at the same night, NBC interrupts Celebrity Apprentice to give the live broadcast of Obama's speech. And I just think it's, you know, a little bit ironic maybe that Donald Trump is having like big numbers on this show and it's being interrupted by what Barack Obama's about to say.
Wow.
There is no shortage of possible rosebud moments for Donald Trump deciding to run for president. It's totally reasonable to say him getting preempted by Obama made him upset, and that's when he decided, you know, who knows?
That's amazing.
That is an amazing tidbit. Okay, so we started to touch on it a little bit, but, you know, I do think that there is, in this moment, the mythos of the SEALs, and particularly SEAL Team 6, really starts to explode. Now, Dan, Obama does not mention SEAL Team 6 in this speech, right? So what is the sort of way that they talk about SEAL Team 6 and the SEALs in general, and then what starts to happen in the aftermath?
They don't talk about SEAL Team 6. Like, even the press conferences that they give afterwards, they sort of talk like vague, like government actors type language instead of saying the Navy SEALs, because, you know, the whole sort of atmosphere around them is complete secrecy, right? And so they really wanted to maintain that. And there's a big controversy, and it's still sort of a right-wing conspiracy that Joe Biden is the one who sort of revealed to the world that it was the Navy SEALs that had done this. And a lot of SEALs are still really mad about that because that led to a lot of people being identified and like maybe putting their own lives at risk and things like that. And that's actually not true. It was actually government officials that had revealed that information. And then Leon Panetta had said it before anybody else. So that's actually just not true. But, you know, I mean, it was the beginning of a time when the SEALs weren't just the sort of mystical background actors, and they were sort of put at the forefront, and they grabbed the opportunity. They had been doing a lot of the fighting in the war on terror. As they say, they were the tip of the spear. They only, you know, prior to this, they only would get about 5 new SEALs a year. It's that hard to make a SEAL. And they wanted at least 500 more. And so they used this as a big marketing thing. And some of the details are, you know, Bin Laden is killed on May 2nd. And by May 4th, Disney's trying to trademark the name SEAL Team 6. And then... Yeah.
That's insane.
And then by May, isn't that kooky? Yeah. Oh, like, as if they're like, I can just see the lawyer being like, let's just try. Let's see if we can get away with it. Right?
Wow.
And then a couple weeks later, they're meeting with Kathryn Bigelow talking about doing the movie Zero Dark Thirty. And then a couple weeks after that, Kathryn Bigelow and the people who are making the movie are sending over scale models of the Bin Laden compound to make sure they're getting it right. So it just happens hyper quick.
Okay, at what moment do you say, too soon? You know, is this too soon? like, what is the appropriate amount of time to wait to, like... The fact that Hollywood so quickly harps on this is so disturbing on so many levels. Like, I don't know, I just, as you're speaking, I just keep thinking, like, the humanity is being completely gutted out of all of this. Like, this is just marketing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's real. I think that's real. But an opportunity, like, I mean, if you had made the biggest news in 10 years, like, would you just, like, humbly, like, do prayer hands and walk away? Or would you, like, exploit that opportunity? And that's certainly what they chose to do.
But exploiting that opportunity, if you can paint the larger picture of the SEALs, is very different from how the SEALs have tended to operate over the years, right?
Yeah, the SEALs have something called the SEAL ethos. It's like 440 words. It's basically like the Boy Scouts motto, but like mixed with like samurai stuff. Like, it is incredibly intense. They all memorize it. It's what they are supposed to not just do, but what they're supposed to live by. And, you know, the line that says they're not supposed to talk about being a SEAL is that it says, I do not advertise the nature of my work or seek recognition for my actions. It's just like, you don't say a word. They call themselves the quiet professionals. That is what they are supposed to do. It's what's ingrained in them. It's a bit of humility almost. I mean, there's practical reasons because you want to be covert. But I do think it's a structural sort of humility that was sort of built into the SEALs. And that just gets thrown out the window. I mean, by the next year, they have a movie called Act of Valor is released that was made alongside with the Navy. And they literally just use active duty real SEALs as actors in the movie.
Wow.
I'm curious because that seems very institutional, and yet at the same time, you have SEALs who are on this team who are writing memoirs. You had the one, Robert O'Neill, who I think he went on, at some point he was on Fox News talking about like being the person who shot Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. How does their code of secrecy break down that way?
Well, it starts with one. Matt Bissonnette was the first person. He publishes a book under the name Mark Owens. Is basically the first-hand account of the bin Laden raid. He actually ends up making almost $7 million off the book. He has to give it all back because he never sought Department of Defense clearance for what he wrote in the book.
Wow.
It's a lot of money to give back.
I know.
It's a lot of money to give back. But then Rob O'Neill publishes his book, and then...
He claims to be the one who actually shot bin Laden, right?
Yeah,
and he's now a Fox News extended universe staple, right? I mean, he's on all the time.
Yes, he is.
Totally, yeah. And dependable right-wing voice, and he got banned from Delta Airlines last year for not wearing a mask. That kind of thing. But it just starts this whole domino effect of all the SEALs that were being quiet. Now everybody starts talking. Like, everybody's writing books.
I mean, I wonder, and this is more of a question than a comment, but I wonder, like, you know, I think about the compensation or the payment that these soldiers are getting, and then I think about the motivation to either capitalize on that economically, to tell that story, and how that works, you know, like, I don't know, maybe I'm just struggling with the idea of, like, what it means to want to tell your story, but you can't tell your story, but you can't make any additional money off of the story, but mm-hmm. everybody's making money off your yeah. story, mm-hmm. like, and these aren't people that are, like, you know, getting paid in the military, like, they're not being paid that yeah. well.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, for sure. And I was talking to one SEAL who works for that. There's a show called Navy SEALs on CBS. It's about Navy SEALs. And he's a SEAL who hires a lot of SEALs to work on that show. And he was saying there's not a lot of career opportunities. If you want to not fight, if you don't want to be a mercenary, after you become a SEAL, you're all busted up. Your body just doesn't work anymore. And part of writing a book or being a public person is part of how they can make money and provide for their families.
Yeah, and especially in this context of being a SEAL and being military, it has become an identity that extends so far beyond just your time in active duty. Well, first off, your time in active duty has been extended, as is something we explore in this series. But then just in general, it's sort of becoming this all-encompassing identity. And so then how do you perpetuate that? How do you continue that? Well, you continue to be a SEAL, and that continues to be your kind of calling card, even as you're back in the quote-unquote real world.
Yeah. I mean, and SEALs go for it. Like, there, you know, there's over 100 books written by SEALs.
Wow.
Including one that the former head of the SEALs, Bill McRaven, is now, who literally on his way out gave everybody a warning saying, you know, stop being so enthralled with yourselves, trying to tamp down on publicity. He's doing a tour for his third book right now. So, like, even the ones that are like, don't do this, like, if the boss is doing it, And he's telling me not to do it, fuck that.
Yeah.
Like, I understand that. If they're not going to do what they're asking me to do, then all bets are mm-hmm. off.
There's another element here, which is that there is pressure on the SEALs to, A, you know, do a lot of the work that other forces used to do and sort of really carry the load for the war on terror, but also just literally to recruit more SEALs. Dan, you hinted at it, but I mean, you know, post 9/11, there was just a directive to just have more SEALs because they were doing more work. And so I'm just, you know, can you describe that and how much that fits into the decision or the sort of creep towards being more public facing?
I mean, it's hard to say how it's hard to like prove the connection, but for sure, you know, that they have a big problem that after 9/11, you know, war becomes less about like front lines and battalions and the sort of traditional World War II kind of war. And it becomes direct action. And that's what special operators, SEALs, Green Berets, Delta Force, Special Forces, all those people. But SEALs especially, they become the ones that are executing this war, and they're getting deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, and they are executing capture kill missions nightly. And there's famously a deck of cards that has all the people, all the bad guys that we're supposedly looking for, and they get information at night saying, okay, who's you're going to get, and the technology had caught up to the point where they could say, not only are you getting this guy, here's what he looks like, here's what he was wearing today, here's who is in his house right now. So it just becomes this very specific, up close and personal, as one SEAL put it that I talked to, like, you could smell their bad breath as you're killing them. Yes. And it is very different than, regardless of what you think about what we should be doing in war, in terms of how it's going to impact the people that are fighting that war, it is a very different proposition to be doing that kind of warfare and to be doing it for so long. And so it really began to wear on the SEAL teams. And so they needed more SEALs to execute that. And part of the way you get people to try out for becoming a SEAL, which is incredibly hard to do, is marketing.
So I'm curious, you know, if we think about the Bin Laden raid as a moment where a story about the SEALs sort of bursts into the public imagination, and there's an infatuation sort of that evolves from that, I think a lot of people now would say when they hear SEALs that the Eddie Gallagher story, there's an argument to be made that the sort of two things that have burst into the public imagination are the Bin Laden raid, SEAL Team 6, and this guy accused of war crimes. And so I'm curious, Dan, you know, what your sense of how the SEALs see themselves in the in the public, how they view that story now, how much that has been complicated by the Eddie Gallagher thing, and whether there is a sort of shift in the self-infatuation or public infatuation with the SEALs.
I think that there's different camps. You know, some describe the difference between like Boy Scouts and pirates. And the pirates are just like old school, like, we'll get the job done. Don't worry about the details. Just let us do our thing. And then there's others who say, there's a line that we don't cross, and there is a moral compass that we have. And just because we can act far away from the generals and we can do direct action where they send us alone without, you know, all the sort of, you know, bells and whistles of the way the military controls the people fighting, that they understand that part of being a SEAL is doing the right thing. And I think that is a real push and pull right now in the teams. And I think it splits down the middle. And some people think Eddie Gallagher, don't worry about the details. Like, they sent him there to kill ISIS, and that's what he did. That is their feeling. And the others feel like that's wrong. And I think there's an argument to be made, and we make it in the podcast, that by not having a moral compass, by not having a line, as one expert put it about moral injury, he said, if you can't see that line, you don't know which side of it you're on. I will say, I forgot to say, one thing I remember about the Bin Laden raid, which they didn't know at the time, but they found out afterwards, is they didn't just get Bin Laden, they got a lot of the stuff from the house, right? Including his hard drive, which has some amazing stuff on it, including an episode of Mr. Bean, which, of course, makes totally perfect sense. There's episodes of Tom and Jerry. And there's also, which I think is the most interesting, there's apparently 28 crocheting tutorials from YouTube. Including one to make an iPod sock. So I just love the image of Bin Laden just like not crocheting an iPod sock, but just like being frustrated that he can't get it right, that it's just not turning out right.
Now, Dan, you're a knitter, right? Crocheter, is that right?
I knit.
Have you ever made an iPod sock?
I haven't. I was going to make hot water bottle socks for people for Christmas, but then I tried sleeping with a hot water bottle for one night to see if it was a good gift, and it's actually completely stifling. But I do know.
Well, this is precisely where I thought this conversation would end up, and so we will we will wrap it up there. But look, we should also say, though, this episode, listeners, if you are listening to this when it came out, this is the day on which the final episode of The Line comes out. We will not tell you what's in there, but we will say that there is something in that episode that we think is going to make some news and really going to sort of, I think, complicate this story. And you know, if you don't have reason enough to listen, I will say, Dan, I think you've done really amazing work here. And that final episode in particular, I think, is pretty stunning. And so, people should go listen to the whole series. And that final episode is out today as you were listening to this.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah, I'm excited.
Well, we will see. But anyway, Dan Taberski, thank you so much. And congratulations again. And Nicole Hammer, thanks to you.
Thanks, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
This Day in Esoteric Political History is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. So if you want to become a supporter of this show and the work that we do at Radiotopia in general, you can go on our website, thisdaypod.com, and find a way to support. One-time donation, monthly donation, we really do appreciate it. Our researcher and producer is Jacob Feldman. Our producer is Brittany Brown. You can get in touch with us with any questions or comments or ideas for the show. Email us thisdaypod@gmail.com, or you can find a form at thisdaypod.com. My name is Jody Avergan. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.
A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body. The death of bin Laden marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
Radiotopia.